fostering equality and redistribution. Instead, it was first about maintaining bourgeois privileges in view of the threat by various forces, the anti-colonial resistance, the resistance against slavery, and the struggle of workers and migrants for their political and social rights. Bourgeois white women, very often acting as an artist or closely linked to art institutions and artists, believed that it would be possible to civilize the people which were named with colonial metaphors, for example, savages, and who lived at the fringes of the industrialized metropolis in material misery, by bringing them into contact with art and building their taste in a bourgeois sense. The terms aspiration and hope were also central in their statements. Instead of material support by the state, these people should be educated to aspire for beauty and higher values, to recognize their place in society and make their own advancement as their art project, for which they were individually responsible. And interestingly, it was about the education of future citizens, which in the frame of a bourgeois understanding of democracy, suffrage had been expanded, were supposed to behave decently instead of organizing riots. Last but not least, the aesthetic philanthropics working at the intersection of education, social work, and artist, and by the way, also in empirical research, they explored public fields of activities, visibility, open space, and development for themselves. However, we shouldn't forget that with these activities they risked a lot, and they also formed alliances with struggles, and some were even put into prison for these alliances, as James Adams, which you could see on the first picture. So their story could also be looked at from a perspective of liberation, as also the legacy by Herbert Read, who was affirmed positively various times during the conference, could be studied in terms of his coloniality, of his writings, and in particular in the education through art publication and his colonial activities as somebody who founded the UNESCO art education, which in the was very effective and took a large effect in the whole Commonwealth. And now I would like to point you to the network, which was also mentioned when I was interested, another roadmap school in which critical art educators from now 24 countries have formed a network, among others, also to write a post-colonial history of cultural and art education. Study at, and there's one working group is only studies Herbert Read's works in the context of coloniality. What I wanted to show with this was that if you have a pedagogy of hope and of aspiration for good life, you should do a central positioning. That is, who brings which aspiration into the educational institution? Who is in the position to define to what one should aspire to, and what is the horizon of hope? That applies also to the overwintering fantasy of most protagonists of progressive education, because when you imagine schools of tomorrow, with some exemption, of the clear political positioning in anarchism and communism, the future horizon has always been a white European and bourgeois horizon, which was considered as something natural. For now 23 years, I've been involved in cooperation between schools, cultural institutions, and artists. The first 10 years in the role as an artist, and then increasingly somebody who initiated these corporations, advising and supporting them, academically analyzing them, and writing stories. Throughout this time, I have understood that this is a point which makes the difference in these cooperation projects. If the question who defines what to aspire to in education becomes content and methods, and is this education-shaped discrimination critically, that is a different reading, or these are different reading glasses than the again and again invoked apparent difference between art and school, between artists and teachers. The attribution that art was free and explorative and school, however, not free and disciplinary, has been repeated since the 1930s, when in the economic global economic crisis with the New Deal program, artists were first used at schools as a job creation program in the US and the UK. The 1970s in Germany, the model attempts of the Social Democrats with artists in schools, you find this also in verbatim as in more recent statements in line with the hegemonization of cultural education, for example, in the UNESCO Roadmap for Arts Education. This paper of 2006 even says that artists are openly assigned to maintain traditional bourgeois and capitalist values, that is, to create the willingness to perform, to take risks, flexibility, competitiveness, etc. And if we wish here that in the education we're responsible, and if we want to produce a capacity aspire and a politics of hope, it needs to be made very clear that this is aspiration is not the one I quote of the world, made to train a workforce that is flexible and adaptable to future labor markets. And at the same time, and this shows very clearly that it is a walk on a tightrope and a very complex power structure, it is about having respect to the people, to the desires and hopes which exist, which very often derogate from these middle-class intellectual ideas, for example, to earn as much money as possible and to have as many status symbols as possible. The design of good life that many artists and actors in cultural institutions reject them reflexively because they have cultural capitals. This field of tension of this contradictory aspiration becomes very clear if cooperation with artists in schools happen where most schools do not have this cultural capital, which is recognized by the majority of society, and are stigmatized very often as not having an education, a term which is very often criticized as a bourgeois construction. And that leads very often to a refusal of the society because they understand that the currency which is used in this game is not theirs and that they are rightly angry about it. Here on the screen, you see the title of a book of 2016, and I was happy to see it here on the book table, which published the research result of a project with the title Jump and Watch, in which theater producers cooperated with students to study school as a system and to work out performance. And here, students, together with the artist, with great efforts and very often they were overtaxed. They really managed to detect the power relationship and power situation which are part of this cooperation and give it a form. So the knowledge which was contributed by the students was recognized and taken seriously as knowledge, which was neither pleasant nor fun for the audience, as it clearly showed the gap between the different ideas of a good life. The title of the book is based on a quotation of one of the production which was difficult to bear with the title Graduation Bang. And I wonder how this is translated into English. That is the whole quote. Maybe you can see it in the interpreting booth, so I wait for the translation. A mission statement, we are not the children you might cast. Your purpose is not our purpose, and you will never understand our language. I think this production is well done because it was difficult to consume and it gave a form to the justified outrage and denial of the students. So there was a form not for the not yet known, but was something that all know but nobody says. In this and also in other projects which we accompanied, it became also clear that both systems, school and art, have their respective imperatives and adjustments, that none stands more for freedom than the other. And I think it would take too much time to read this. This is a comparison of school and theater in the same research project, and it shows that both institutions are not that far apart as one might assume. In the concrete case, it was as we learned, the production visibility and performance imperatives of the theater, which made it difficult to understand, to discuss more than coming to terms with the topics which came to the surface. For that, we needed a different form of conflict management and different timeline, a difference of both system, which I would like to give as an example, that school tries to be as transparent as possible and to formalize the assessment quiz, expecting of the teachers that they should subject themselves to this by striving to be successful, while the art system disguises and informalizes the assessment criteria and expect of those striving for success by to subject them to this and by taking them up and by behaving like this. You can't call neither democratic. Both systems are authoritarian. Both serve social reproduction. Against this background, the voluntariness which is claimed by the art, which is said to distinguish artistic action from schools, should be probed in a critical manner. Never has there been a conference at a school with the title Art Institutions of Tomorrow. The corporation, however, have a great potential for all those involved if, instead of repeating mutual attributions, you form consistently power critical alliances for the redistribution of capital. Of this, numerous historical and contemporary examples give evidences, in particular in which artists of color, queer or feminist artists were involved, the history of whom has not even been begun to be written. And that is why I'm going to commit myself more in this field, because the forms of articulation, opportunities of articulations by art are an important resource. It's working with symbols to work towards visibility, towards representation, which is a central political field of articulation, experiment, involvement, and negotiation. Education with art has not always been, right from the beginning, a means of formation, but also a tool to resist and self-empowerment. Art has not, but can be used to disrupt normativity and to change it. But to make this resource accessible means that you have to take the effort to recognize the knowledge linked to certain professions of educators, arts, and students, and to work out together how they can interact in the perspective of redistribution. As I said, these processes are always full of tension under the current circumstances. And those teaching, be them artists or teachers, need to be ready to be critical as far as the institutions themselves are concerned. They need the readiness to read, to learn from mistakes, to learn from the reproduction of power relations. For that, in schools and art institutions have to change, and both have to stop to be white spaces. As recently, the expertise of the organization Citizen for Zero proposed for diversification of Berlin's cultural community. It means co-determination and access at all levels, program, personnel, and audience. I name the dimensions structure, canon, methods, and attitudes. At schools, it might mean curriculum, teachers, methods, and training. In this respect, we are living in interesting times, which on the one hand is shaped by the strength of new and also old initiatives, as this conference has shown. On the other hand, there is a delegitimization of gained rights, and the space for critical practice is getting scarcer and scarcer. That is why it's even more important to bundle forces and to shape the art education of tomorrow, interestingly, not only in terms of art and education, but also in a sense of the critique of discrimination.